Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. This week, the first topic is the new Employment Rights Act in the UK, which has recently come into force. I discuss the changes and the effects they may have with employment lawyer Sarah Jane Butler across a wide range of topics, from employment of young people.
Young people in particular will end up being disadvantaged because they don't have the experience and they don't have the people are not really prepared to take a risk, whereas previously I think employers would have been prepared to take a risk and to try somebody out.
And then on to how businesses, large and small, can ensure they are following the new regulations.
Actually, in some businesses, the HR teams outnumber a vast number of other departments. That's quite a scary thing that there's that many people in HR working in some large corporates.
Goodness, because
they have to have so much compliance.
Then also in the workplace, I talk about office design specifications for neurodivergent people with Millie Lawrence. She's the design manager at Cedars.
But it also can increase productivity. It can improve the talent retention and reduce the cognitive fatigue as well. So all of those aspects are going to be improved with a better environment.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. So my first guest is employment lawyer Sarah Jane Butler. We were talking about the new employment laws in the UK. And my first question was, when did they come into force?
Yep, they came in, a lot of them, not all of them. There are still 20 plus changes still to come into force between now and 2027. But a whole raft of them, yes, have come into force this month.
So before we get into that, I've got a bit more of a basic question for you.
Mm-hmm.
In the stuff I was sent, you're down as an HR lawyer. So this is human rights or human resources or both?
Well, you could probably say it's both. It's actually meant to be an employment lawyer. So
okay.
I retrained as initially I was a finance lawyer, but I retrained to be an employment lawyer a while ago. We look after employment rights for employers and employees.
Okay. So there are sort of big changes to the employment laws happening right now. But it got me to thinking, I mean, you know, the Dickensian days of the workhouse and the deep, dark, dank mills, you know, are long gone. Is more protection really needed? Because, you know, we're kind of arrived, haven't we?
I sort of agree with you. I think the system as it was actually working rather well. But the Labour government in their manifesto was very, very keen to improve the lives of employees to a greater extent and effectively to give them more work. So effectively now they have earlier protection than they would have done. And they don't have to quote unquote earn their rights time-wise as they used to have to be able to do. It's very employee focused. So one might say it's not very employer friendly at all, which is exactly what employers need right now, along with all the NIC raises and minimum wage raises and everything else that's going on, cost of living, etc., etc. But no, I think now it's the first major wave of changes that have been brought into force under the Employment Rights Act, which came into force back in autumn 2025, and the changes will now continue between now and 2027.
Okay.
So there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I don't spend much time thinking about this stuff, I have to say, I suppose because I don't have to. But one thing that has been in the news, maybe not so much recently, but certainly a few years ago, a few months ago, is this 0 hours contract. Now, what are they, and do they still exist under this new raft of laws?
Yeah, they do still exist. So zero-hour contracts are effectively where an employee agrees to be kind of on call to do work, but they don't have a prescribed set of hours that they have to work. So the most of us, if in our employment contract, will say you have to work from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, for example. 0 hours basically says there's no set number of hours that you have to work, but you're kind of on call to do work as and when an employer is asking you to be available. So they can be misused, but equally they can be a wonderful flexible tool for people who want to be able to pick and choose when they work and how they work. And also they're a very good tool for employers to kind of have that flexible part-time resource that they can call on. But now all those elements are changing. And in essence, there's going to be much more kind of protection for 0 hours. It's not disappearing entirely, but there's going to be more protection for those who are under 0 hour contracts.
Okay. Can you summarise kind of simply so I might understand kind of what that might be?
So effectively, well, there's two different things I should go back to. So number one, the Employment Rights Act is really looking at flexible working in the modern workplace. So that's under which 0 hour contracts fall. So employees now have the right, for example, to request flexible working as of day one, which they didn't have the right before. Mm-hmm. And they did, but now employers have to really properly consider those requests and justify any refusal, for example. Equally, things like 0 hours contracts, so I'm just brilling up my notes here, so you've got them on call, so I can give you everything that you have. But 0 hour contracts will basically change so that now workers and agency workers will be offered a guaranteed hours. So previously it wasn't, as I mentioned previously, the hours were not guaranteed. Now right. They will be guaranteed during a quote unquote prescribed period, which will be sort of 12 weeks. And effectively, there's going to be a quite detailed process that will be set up managing that. Now, this doesn't come into place. This 0 hour contract changes are coming into force in 2027. And one of the biggest problems with this new statute is that a lot of the devil is in the detail, and that detail hasn't been set out yet. So
okay.
It's not great for employers because they know it's coming, but they just don't know what is coming. Yes,
okay, that's
what it is. And effectively, what it now means is that if employers decide at short notice that they're going to curtail people's shifts or cancel them at short notice, then they will have to pay compensation to employees.
Right. Okay. In general, just keeping things generally rather than kind of specifically, what's good for staff is kind of ultimately, this is more of a question than a statement, I have to say. What's good for staff is ultimately good for companies, because a happy workforce is generally more productive, and that's got to be good for everyone, and ultimately good for UK PLC. You know, we're more productive, we're making more stuff, and our ranking up the world, our ranking on the world order goes up, and all that sort of thing. Is that actually true? Is there any proof of that?
No, not really. So I have nothing against protecting workers' rights and making it an easier.
Well, that's a good job, because that's your job, isn't it?
It is. Protecting workers' rights is my job. But I think the problem with this is that it will make, what with all the minimum wage and the national insurance contributions and all the other costs that are impinging on employers at the moment, and bear in mind, majority of this will fall on small and medium businesses, because the large corporate businesses, they've got legal teams, they've got HR resources, they've got people who can do all the compliance, they can change all their, they can go through their whole contracts and their policies and all of that other kind of stuff. But you're kind of, you know, your fish shop owner down the road, or your, you know, truck driver who's running like a small business, does not have the time to try and work through what all of these various changes mean. And also, with, they know, for example, the sick pay is paid on day one, which has now come into force, or that carers now have parental leave as of day one, which has now come into force, they will stop and think a little bit more about when they hire somebody. And I think young people in particular will end up being disadvantaged because they don't have the experience, and they don't have the people are not really prepared to take a risk. Whereas previously, I think employers would have been prepared to take a risk and to try somebody out and to basically work through it. Now there's more kind of thinking involved, and it's clear that for so many people, there's just a shift, really. So it's proactive compliance rather than before. It would have been a reactive situation. Now they have to proactively comply and, you know, for example, keep proper records around holiday pay, which a lot of people might not have done before, and they have to justify their decisions. So whether that's flexibility or dismissing somebody or whatever it might be. So the onus is much more on employers to show that they're actually doing what they're meant to be doing.
Okay. Well, I suppose time will tell kind of how that pans out to some extent. But I did a little bit of homework before our chat because I knew I was dealing with something that is, you know, I don't know much about. And there are some things that account for the main reasons for long-term absence of the workforce. I was thinking, will these changes kind of help reduce these kind of reasons for long-term absence? And the main two are mental health, which apparently accounts for 47% of long-term absence, and second is musculoskeletal problems, you know, back pain from sitting badly or moving stuff around without proper training, that sort of thing. And that accounts to 14 to 23% of long-term absence. And so these are massive. So I thought if the new rules help these figures to come down, potentially it's good for everyone. It's good for staff and it's good for employers. Do you think there's any hope for that?
No. I don't think that the rights that have come into force are going to have a huge impact on the reasons for long-term absence. Sick pay now is basically paid as of day one. Previously, you'd have a three-day kind of waiting period before you got paid. Mm-hmm. So one might say that people would not go off sick because they know they wouldn't be paid for the first 3 days. Now that they know they will be paid for the first 3 days, they're probably more likely to go off sick than they were beforehand, for example. The employer's duty of care hasn't changed in this new act. So there's still a duty of care. Effectively it's become more important, but it's always been there. So if you combine, you know, day one rights, as I've just mentioned, flexible remote working, stronger enforcement, all of those things, it means that actually employers now have to think more about how people are working and how they get people back into work and what they do. And they've always really, a good employer has always had to do that before. They've had to make reasonable adjustments to somebody who has musculoskeletal problems, for example, or has mental health issues, or, for example, you know, they come back. So there's already a duty on employers to look after their staff and make sure they're okay and make reasonable adjustments if they know about it. But I don't think anything is going to particularly change, you know, the statistics that you just quoted from the current Employment Rights Act.
That's a shame. I was starting to feel quite positive about the whole thing. But I'm feeling less positive now because, you know, the number of people that are off due to mental health for some reason or another, it's eye-wateringly huge.
It's absolutely huge. It's absolutely huge. And if you think about it, if you are off, the burden on an employer is equally really hard because they have to get somebody in to do the work. So you're almost sort of paying double. So they have to pay sick pay, which they don't get paid back anymore, and they'd have to pay somebody to come in and train them and to do the work that person who's been off sick is doing. And then there is a kind of fit for work, so return to work. So you when somebody, for example, has a mental health issue or a musculoskeletal issue, the key thing is to go to an occupational health therapist. So an occupational health therapist will basically do a report and will suggest reasonable adjustments, and an employer can, now that all costs money, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And then that occupational health therapist will basically say, well, actually, this person needs to have a staggered return back to work, or needs to have certain adjustments, physical adjustments, you know, in terms of being a proper workstation assessments, you know, suitable chairs, ergonomic setups, ensuring that if people are working from home, that they're working in a safe environment which is not damaging their back, or similarly, if they do have ADHD or a mental health issue, that effectively, you know, they are making sure that person is in a safe environment in order for them to return back to work. So there's lots of things that employers have to think about.
All right, so they've had to have thought about this previously, and
yes.
So there's no dramatic change.
No.
Okay.
No,
I went into this discussion a bit more positive, actually, because just recently I spoke to someone whose job it is to design offices, and they were talking about how in their design they've started to take into account neurodivergent people, of which there are many, actually. I hadn't really thought about it before. And, you know, working in open plan offices is sometimes quite difficult for these people, so you can make changes, which, you know, aren't actually that hard to do, and can help a lot of people. So I was thinking, okay, this is very positive. It sort of, this story goes quite nicely with this topic, but it seems potentially not so much.
I think an employer's always had a duty of care.
Yeah,
so the fact that somebody is neurodivergent, for example, equally, women who are going through the menopause are also being designed office spaces so that they can, you know, be somewhere where they're not, you know, too hot or so on and so forth. So equally, people who suffer from migraines quite often can be put into quieter spaces. So I think there's always been that kind of duty on an employer to have to help the staff and make sure that they are working in the best environment possible.
Right.
Now, I don't think that anything in the Employment Rights Act is there to change any of that, but I think there's just a greater route now for people to call out bad employers who are not looking after their staff.
Okay. Well, that's a positive, I suppose.
Yes.
Any other positives? Because so far chatting to you, I'm starting to feel a little bit glum. Hit us with some more positives.
Well, I think for employees, it's definitely a positive situation. They have more rights than they've ever had before. They still need to raise any issues they have early on, so they need to be able to tell people whether they've got a musculoskeletal issue or a mental health issue. So they need to be there, you know, first and foremost, and tell their employer, because the employer doesn't have a right to help unless it knows about it. So, or a duty to help unless it knows about it. So it's key for all employees that they must speak up effectively. For employers, I would say that the direction of travel is really clear. They need to have, there's going to be more protection for their employees. They're going to have earlier rights, and there's going to be stronger enforcement abilities. So they need to get on top of this kind of stuff. It's not rocket science. It's just making sure, it's just more paperwork and more bureaucracy. But, you know, ultimately, the underlying aim of the Employment Rights Act is a positive one. No one's going to say that you shouldn't protect employees, because, as you say, the days of the mill owners are well and truly behind us. But at the same point in time, I think a lot of employers are going to be kind of, you know, where do I stand on this? What do I need to do? You know, where who do I need to talk to? What comes in when, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's just being aware, really,
right,
what's going on.
So it's not going to make productivity start to roar and for UK PLC to climb up the ladder of kind of leading the way.
I wish, but unfortunately, no. I suspect that we're already seeing a downturn in employment figures.
Not for lawyers, though. It might be good for lawyers.
It might be very good for lawyers. Very good for lawyers and very good for HR teams. Actually, in some businesses, the HR teams outnumber a vast number of other departments. That's quite a scary thing, that there's that many people in HR working in some large corporates.
Goodness,
because
me.
Because they have to have so much compliance. That's a bit
scary. It's a bit of a negative comment to finish on, but let's finish on something a little more positive. If
Definitely.
People are listening to this, and you know, maybe they're running a small business and they're thinking, goodness, all right, let's get this sorted out. Can you suggest a good source of information where they can get good, sensible help that will not cost them a fortune and will be relatively quick, so they can carry on running their business but be in compliance?
Well, I'm sure my marketing guru within my team would probably shoot me if I didn't mention, obviously, you can come to Farringford Legal because we can look after everybody. But equally, there are websites like ACAS that have lots of information on there. There's lots of information on the internet. Dare I say it, there's the joys of ChatGPT and AI that could probably come up with the policies. I think it's just being aware of the changes and just making sure that you are fully... that you're getting ahead of the law, basically. That's the key thing. Once you've got the right policies and processes in place, it will be easy, but it's just that kind of initial steps that you just need to get over first.
Sure. Okay. Sarah Jane, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to chat about this, because, you know, this is important stuff.
It is, definitely. But I think it's a good sign for most employees, and I think it's a definite thing that once employers get their head around how it all works, it will be a good sign for them as well.
Good. All right. Many thanks.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling. Cheating. Being chased. Naked. Drowning. Losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
The topics on this week's show are all about the workplace, so I will mention, if I may, the BackApp chair, which is absolutely wonderful if you're worried about your posture or you suffer from the agonies of a bad back while you're sitting at your desk at work. The BackApp chair has helped literally hundreds of people and can probably help you. So if you are suffering from bad backs or you're worried about the posture, worry about your posture, have a look at my website. It is relaxbackuk.com. You can see all about the chair there, and also you can ask to try one out if you would like. Right, on with the next part of the show. My next guest is Millie Lawrence. She's design manager at Cedars, and the topic is office design for neurodivergent people. My first question to her was actually, what does the design manager at Cedars do? And also, what actually do Cedars get up to?
Okay, so I guess I'll start off with Cedars. So we are a German manufacturer of office furniture, and we produce everything in Germany. We've got two factories. And my role as a design manager, I work alongside the sales. They sort of go out and get the customers, and I'll help them work on projects that can be floor planning or just like adapting the existing furniture and maybe adding in a few additional products into that to create a better workspace. I also look after the showroom here in London, in Clerkenwell, and anything design related really comes under my umbrella.
Okay. And you've started, or you've probably been doing this for a while, but to think about a particular type of customer when it comes to design and how your overall design can help that particular sort of customer. Can you describe what sort of customer this is, and, you know, how you go about doing it?
I'll say that every customer is extremely different. Even though it is office furniture, there's not sort of one perfect space for each customer. They come to us and they sort of explain what their needs are, maybe what they're lacking, and we can give them some advice using our products and implement that. Or typically we can also work with the architects and designers who have already gone and done that design, and then we would be putting our products onto the floor plan where they've already specified certain layouts.
Okay. What I was getting at actually was the needs of neurodivergent people, because there's a lot of neurodivergent people in the workforce.
Yes.
I dread to think. Does anyone know the kind of what percentage of the workforce have neurodivergence of one sort or another?
So there's sort of about 1 in 5 employees at the moment, but that could be diagnosed and undiagnosed. But the number could be a lot higher because a lot of people don't admit that they have that. So the statistics on that are quite vague.
Okay. All right. But certainly there's a lot.
Yes, definitely. Well, so, there's a whole sort of range as well.
I'm sure. Yeah, we'll come on to talk about that. So do you find that your customers are thinking that it makes, you know, financial sense to cater for all sorts of people?
Yes, I think so. But not just ethically, but it also can increase productivity. It can improve the talent retention and reduce the cognitive fatigue as well. So all of those aspects are going to be improved with a better environment.
Okay. And well, neurodivergent can mean an awful lot of different things. What conditions are included as far as your office design is concerned?
Okay, so a lot of the common conditions are sort of autism, ADHD, dyslexia and dyspraxia. But yeah, like I said, there's a whole range. So there's not one size fits all.
Okay. So, I mean, is it really possible to design an office with such a vast array of kind of people in mind? Sounds almost impossible to me.
Yeah, well, so it's having that balance and also making sure that there's choice. So there's different settings for those needs. So everyone can sort of be catered to. As you said, it's hard to design for everyone, but if you have different spaces, some like zoning, that can definitely help.
Okay. So when I used to work in a large office, and it was a large open plan office. And, you know, I found it quite distracting. You know, you got the printer churning away, people chatting, a delivery of something, the AC is on. So, you know, one part of the office is cold, another part of the office is hot. You got meetings going on and like window open, window shut discussions. Like there's this phrase, cognitive overload, it kind of in that environment seems quite appropriate. I mean, how do you deal with open plan offices, or are they a bad idea now?
Well, so they obviously, like you said, they create constant noise, visual distractions, and there's like also that lack of safe space as well. So I think open plan offices are an issue, but they can be achieved. They can be a better working environment if you implement things like acoustics. I mean, I wouldn't advise open plan offices, but they are still very common. So it's just adapting to what you already have.
Okay. So what do we go for now? Because this whole hot desking idea is kind of quite a new thing. And you mentioned a kind of a safe working place, which some people like. So having to book a desk and not knowing where you're going to sit, I can imagine that being kind of quite upsetting for some people.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it can be challenging, especially for neurodivergent people, because like you said, there's a lack of routine there, and it can require a lot of like repeated sensory adjustment to make sure it's at the right height or et cetera. So I think designers should be looking at creating spaces that have maybe some anchor desks in there as well for people that require it.
So when you say an anchor desk, you mean that's a desk that you use every day?
Yeah, so it's like dedicated to that person.
I must admit, I like that. I like having my my photos,
with
my family on my desk, that sort of thing. And I'm sure I'm not the only one.
No, I don't think. I think a lot of people, even whether they're neurodivergent or not, we like our sort of creature comfort. So I think it's important to have some anchor desking. While hot desking can be good because some offices are working half at home, half at the office. So it really, again, depends on every situation or every business and how they want to function.
Yeah. I mean, potentially a bit of a minefield, I would imagine. you mentioned noise, and yes. You know, that's going to affect everyone in a different way. I have heard about these noise cancelling headphones, people using those. Is that just, you know, that's is that an easy way out? If someone finds the noise distracting, just give them a pair of headphones and tell them to shut up and get on with their work.
I don't think that is the best solution, to be honest, because it can also then create a barrier between people, can make them feel a bit isolated. So again, the use of like acoustic zoning or sound absorbing materials, and maybe even implementing some quiet rooms, can be a better approach to that.
Okay. All right. So in these quiet rooms, that what you're working them all the time, or just working them kind of when it suits you?
I think that they would probably be used on like a booking system, maybe. So if you knew that you needed to have certain hours of the day or a few hours out of your day, you could book it, and then you'll know whether the room's going to be free or not. So okay. There's not that anticipation of whether it's going to be free.
Something that I have to think about working at home, actually, lighting.
Yes, very important.
Well, is it? Just how important is it? Because, you know, if it's a dark day, turn the lights on and we're okay. Or is it a bit more complicated than that?
Some people can be really sensitive to like the flickering or the glare or even the echo of like the sound in the space. So again, there should be choice implemented there. Maybe looking at different areas and seeing whether it's needed to be like ambient lighting or task lighting. Dimmable systems can work as well. Again, it's just having that choice and maybe the flexibility to personalize the lighting in that space.
I mean, dimmable systems can buzz, actually. I've got a neighbor whose dog goes absolutely bonkers at the dimmer light thing. When you dim the lights, it kind of makes a buzz. It drives the dog nuts.
Oh no. Well, luckily we don't have dogs in the workplace.
Some people do.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to design for allowing dogs in offices?
Not yet, but I would really like to have a project like that.
Okay. I think it might be more common than you imagine. I mean, I work at home, so my dog often comes in to see me. But I when I come into London on the train, I often see people that look like they're going to work in an office with a dog. And, you know, they're not blind. You know, they're taking the dog with them, as opposed to the other way around. Okay. Sorry, off track a little bit there. Modern offices quite often have different zones, and we touched on it a little bit earlier. You know, a place for meetings, a place for quiet concentration, or a place if you want to use your phone, all that sort of thing. How does that fit in with neurodivergent design? Because, you know, there is no. With that, there's no safe space. You're moving around all over the time, all over the place.
Well, I think that zoning is a great tool, to be honest, for inclusive design, because it allows that choice, and each zone is going to have its own area. Like each area or environment is going to signal the behaviours that are expected in that workplace. So if you are, you might, but if you like the quiet and prefer more quiet working or alone working, you would, the other people in that area would be working in the same way. So it's sort of like it's a respect level, and everybody will be having similar tasks in those areas.
Okay. Does this work with offices? I mean, office space is expensive, and having different zones sounds kind of quite not very, it's going to take up a lot of space. It's not very efficient in space. It's going to be expensive. Do people really want that or want to pay for that?
Again, I think it depends on how the business wants to move forward. It depends what they care about. And like we said, going back to the beginning, does it make financial sense? These areas can produce and increase productivity. So
it's a discussion it's you have to have with the customer.
Yeah. If it's costing a bit more money, but you're getting better results, then it's an investment.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, and you know, you've got to mull over what the customer wants, what their budget is, etc.
What about movement? Because some neurodivergent people do like to move. I mean, there's two things here, I think. Some people like to kind of, when they're sitting down, kind of almost fidget, kind of swing their legs, what have you.
And then that's me.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people do that. And then there's also, and I don't think this is necessarily a neurodivergent thing. Everybody knows someone who, if they're sitting at their desk, they get a call on their mobile phone, and then they start parading up and down the office, shouting into the phone. That drives me nuts when that happens. How can you deal with both those things?
I think that there needs to be separate movement and concentration areas, and circulation routes in the space should definitely not disturb the areas that are especially for concentration.
So how can you do that? Arrows on the floor or something?
So I think it can be achieved in many different ways. Maybe you're going to have separate rooms, or maybe it is just like visually distinctive by the flooring is changed, or the use of colour, but also using sit-stand desks and different seating in those areas could also benefit the range.
Okay, so a few different things. Now, colours, you spoke about colours.
Yeah.
Right, I'm colourblind, so I don't really think about colours terribly much. Anywhere, much to my wife's dismay, I have to say. But so do colours in an office really matter that much?
I think yes. And if we're talking about neurodiversity, I would avoid overly saturated palettes. But like I said before, you can use colours, different textures to even zone the spaces. But the texture of the finish can also be just as important as the visual, because sometimes a rough fabric can be a bit overstimulating, just as a bright colour could be. But again, people are going to probably want to make sure that it's like branded in the space. But I personally like to use a lot of like natural colours. I feel like they're quite calming, but that's more of a personal opinion.
Okay. So do you find some companies paint the walls like with the company colour and like
what I typically see, and I wish I didn't, is just the typical white and black. I feel like it's so cold, always black seats and white tops,
right?
Yeah. But that's just me, more from a designer's point of view. I would like to see a little bit more colour, not overly saturated, but I would like to see some more colour in the workplace.
Yeah, all right, I could go along that. Along with that, is it possible to design things such that the kind of user of a particular space can change their environment, you know, can put the lighting to what they want, can change, well, maybe different colored lighting, and you know, can you set things up such that the individual can change things on a, you know, on an hour by hour basis, or as soon as they get to a particular desk, you know, oh, I'll have this color and that color, or the curtains open more or less, all that sort of thing?
Yeah. I think that we should think about designing to offer choice. And like you said, whether it's adjusting the lighting, or there's different types of acoustic conditions, or even different types of seating, I think that can really help.
Okay. And that's realistic, is it? I mean, I said that thinking, you know, it's not really very possible, but it sounds like it might be.
I really think it can be. Okay. I don't think that a whole redesign is necessary. You can swap a few products out and hopefully transform the space that way.
Okay. Actually, that was going to be my next question. If someone calls you in to ask about a particular space, do you find yourself having to suggest a complete redesign, or can you do kind of a few little tweaks here and there? To help, to, you know, to really help with neurodivergent people, rather than just sort of a token gesture?
Yes, I think it obviously depends on the client. Some people will want to just come in and have a complete move around and a complete refit. But you can, if you're trying to, you can just work with a few different changes in there. Like I said, the acoustics, or even maybe some desk dividers. I see quite commonly now retreat spaces. And again, the lighting, the temperature and the intensity can also just impact the space slightly different.
A retreat space. Tell us a bit more what you mean by that.
So I see typically on a lot of floor plans now that they have a retreat space that would normally have more of like a lounge chair, and it would be either in a separate room, and that would be for just one person. I mean, that could be used for a prayer room, or I see like a lot of breastfeeding rooms could be used for that as well. But also that I see typically a lot in the workspace, but also along with our portfolio, that there are more sort of like a cafe style. So it breaks up that workspace, but maybe you could still be working from those spaces, but it wouldn't be such focused alone work. Maybe it is something that you can sit there and work more collaboratively on.
Okay. All right. So look, I mean, there's obviously an awful lot to this topic, yeah. And it's very useful for a lot of people, a lot of companies. So if people are listening and think, all right, actually, I'd like to find out a bit more about this, can you suggest any useful resources, with good, solid information that people can go to in the first instance?
So I think that a lot of academic research papers can actually be really helpful, looking into like the neuroscience of it. Workspace surveys can be good. But also looking for the insights from groups like Neurodiversity in Business. But a lot of people now, including SADAs, are publishing their own papers on inclusive design. I think it's a really popular topic right now. So okay. I think even if you're looking on social media, you'll probably see something quite captivating about it.
Okay, so if you just do the classic Google neurodiversity in office design, you'll find something useful. Okay. There is a danger in doing that. You'll find something that is kind of full of disinformation, misinformation, that sort of thing. Is there somewhere a website you can suggest that you know is rock solid good information?
I would say the standards like the British Council for Office Guidance could even be a good one. I mean, that's going to be up to regulations as well. Neurodiversity in Business.
Okay, Neurodiversity in Business.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a very good place to start. So, Millie, look, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat about this. I think it's an important subject that can potentially help a lot of people. So many thanks.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it. And yeah, I hope this does help some people out there.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were employment lawyer Sarah Jane Butler and office design manager Millie Lawrence. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.